The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Head on Fire is a Patreon-supported podcast. Supporters of the show get early access to ad-free episodes, a private Discord server, archives, and more. All benefits are offered on a sliding scale, so no matter your level of donation, you never miss out. If you like this show, consider supporting it with a dollar a month or whatever you can at patreon.com/headonfirepod. Thanks, and enjoy the show.
Hey everybody, happy new year. Welcome to 2024 and a whole new year of Head on Fire. Thanks for letting me take a little time off. Now, if you were like me, you were not a math kid. Math was not your favorite subject. It wasn't your fifth favorite subject, and you did everything you could to avoid taking math in college. But my guest today argues that we don't have these feelings about math because it itself is a drab or uninteresting subject. It's how math is being taught that's the problem. Kyne Santos uses social media to teach math subjects that range from simple addition and subtraction to more esoteric concepts about impossible objects or quantum mechanics. And he does it in drag. Because sometimes Kyne puts on a wig, drops the surname, and becomes the Canadian Drag Race superstar alum, Kyne, who teaches us how math can be a living, breathing, interesting subject that both enriches and entertains. And she has a new book out hoping to do just that called Math in Drag, which comes out March 5th. So get out your red folders because we are going back to math class. Here's Kyne Santos. Kyne Santos, thanks so much for being here on Head on Fire. Welcome. Thanks so much.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
I am so excited to speak with you. I have been a fan of yours from afar, which is kind of strange because you talk about something on your social media that has terrified me for decades now, and that is math. For people that don't know you or your content, tell people a little bit about yourself and what it is that you do.
Sure. So I'm a drag queen from Canada. I was on the first season of Canada's Drag Race. But outside of drag, I was a math student at the University of Waterloo. I have a math degree. And during the pandemic, I started posting videos on TikTok, just doing math riddles and talking about my math homework dressed in drag. And the videos really blew up. And I think ever since then, people have just known me as the math queen, the math drag queen. So I've sort of just made it my shtick, really. I have just loved math and drag kind of separately for so long. And I just like spreading my passion for education and to spread my favorite subject to people, because I feel like lots of people, they are like you and they have this idea of math, and math sort of has a bad reputation. So my message is to share to the world, no, math doesn't have to be so hard and frustrating. Math can actually be kind of fun.
So I actually want to start there with you because I feel like I share a kinship with you and that we are both very passionate advocates for subjects that typically get maligned. I feel like, so I'm a poet. I've released a couple of collections of poetry, and I feel like when you tell people that you write poetry, the first thing, oh, I hate that. I hate poetry, or I don't understand poetry. And that, you know, as somebody that loves it, obviously makes you kind of sad. It's like, you know, I totally get it. In eighth grade, you read Robert Frost and you were told that the last great poet died 50 years ago and that all poems are hidden behind 17 layers of double entendre and metaphor and all of that. And that's not true. Poetry is a wonderful, living, breathing organism. And I'm sure that something is similar for math. When you say, oh, I have a degree in math, or oh, I'm the math queen, do you get reactions like, oh, I hate math?
Oh, all the time. I feel it's similar to poetry in that the way that it's taught in schools is not the same thing that made me fall in love with it. I liked math when I was in school. I liked memorizing my times tables and sort of getting the right answer. But that's not really the thing that made me think math was elegant and beautiful. It was doing higher levels of math in university and taking math contests that I started to see, oh, actually math isn't just about plugging numbers into a calculator and getting the right answer or solving for X. Sometimes math can be about creativity and problem solving. And sometimes there's not just one correct answer. Sometimes there's many different ways to do it. And when I saw that element of creativity, that's the thing that got me hooked.
What was the first moment where you realized that math was part of a greater creative field and wasn't just, you know, your times tables?
I think when I started learning about proofs and seeing how there's like multiple ways that you could prove something and it's not necessarily just one correct answer, it actually took a little bit of creativity. And you can compare proofs. Sometimes you can prove something with like 10 pages of work, or sometimes you can prove it with just a simple diagram. And I think that's the element that you can start to talk about the subjective aesthetic beauty of it and the elegance and the purity of math that mathematicians go on about.
A lot of drag queens do end up going on to write books or to, you know, produce other kinds of content or something like that. But it's usually centered on something that
drag.
People typically associate with drag. I'm starting a makeup line. I've got a new single coming out. You have a book coming out about math. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. It's called Math and Drag. I have it right here. It's with Johns Hopkins University Press. And I initially set out to
Are you the first drag queen that has been published under a university press? Because that's amazing.
Maybe. I'm not sure. But yeah, it's funny because I set out not even really wanting to do the book about drag.
Sure.
Because if you watch my videos, I do just talk about math. I'm not like on there talking, hey, everybody, look at my wig and my dress. Sometimes I am like that, but I really do just like talking about math. And I guess my videos, since they have a visual element to it, you get to see the drag while you're hearing about math. But my publishers were like, oh, well, since this is just a book, you have to sort of give us the drag also through the words. So I had to figure out how to sort of infuse the visual aspect of drag onto the page. So it ends up being a book that's much more than just math. It's also about queer history, my career as a drag queen, my life, and my story of coming out as gay, and all of those things interweaved with math lessons.
What I don't think people realize is you really do join a rather storied pantheon of queer mathematicians. Without queer people, I mean, like, I don't know that we would have cell phones. I don't know that we would have won the wars that we did. I mean, you know, what part of your sort of math journey did you start discovering some of those those queer mathematical historical figures? And did any of them ever play a role in your appreciation and love of math, or play a role in writing the book?
Honestly, when I was in school, I didn't really learn about people like Alan Turing and other queer mathematicians, because when you're in school, you only really just learn about the math side of it. You don't learn about the human stories behind the theorems and behind the equations. That's something that I've had to learn for myself by doing my own research. And it does play a big role in the book, because I feel like the way that we teach math has to change. I think that we should teach it in a more human way. We shouldn't just like sort of force kids to memorize these equations just because I said so. So I definitely, going into writing the book, I wanted to add all this background context so that other people reading the book could sort of see that math is so much more than just numbers on a page. It has to do with us humans who are discovering it and writing about it. And those humans have stories and dramas, and there are lots of queer people in this pantheon of mathematicians that do deserve to be talked about, because I feel like math and the stereotype of who is a math person is more, you think of it as like something for straight guys to do. And you think of it as like, oh, if I want to be taken seriously, if I want to be professional, I have to sort of be just very professional and straight and put on a suit and tie and not have my limp wrists all around. But, you know, I'm trying to show people, you know, it doesn't really matter. All that matters is what's in your head and what you can do with a pencil and paper, or a chalk and a chalkboard.
You do talk about some pretty esoteric aspects of math that I think people are kind of shocked to realize that math can do all these things. Math can describe all of these interesting things. What I really love are some of the videos where you talk about like things that are impossible in our real world. And I'm going to get the names wrong because I forgot to write them down, but like the vase that like intersects with itself or something like that. And
yes,
then
it's called a Klein bottle.
Yes, that's fascinating. I love that. I feel like the Klein bottle is like the drag queen of
wait,
math
I have one right
itself.
Here. Like,
you have a Klein bottle? Wait, how? How do you have a Klein bottle?
There's this guy, I think he's in California, that makes these.
That's amazing.
He's very eccentric. I really recommend that people look into it.
Now, I know that you've made this distinction and you've taught your audience well. Is that a real Klein bottle or is it as close as we can get in our...
It's as close as we can get because technically the Klein bottle should be a four-dimensional object. So in this one, you sort of see the glass is intersecting with itself. But in theory, it shouldn't have to do that. But because we unfortunately just live in a three-dimensional world, this is the best we can do.
So I want to talk about those more esoteric aspects of math for a second, because you really get into them and they're very fascinating. And I think they kind of, that's the part of math that for me would have like made my eyes sparkle as a kid when I was learning math and had my little red folder because red is math and would have like opened the door. Why don't we teach cool math stuff? Why don't we? But two, what can those more esoteric parts of math teach us about the world that we live in? What's next on the horizon of discovery using that more esoteric side of math?
Edward Frankel makes a great analogy, and he says that the way that we teach math is sort of like if we taught art by making students paint a fence. You have to sort of start by just learning the basics. But if you went into an art class and made students just paint a fence and never showed them the works of the great masters, you wouldn't have many students coming out of art class saying, I love art and I want to be an artist. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a similar thing with math. With math, you have to start by learning the basics. You have to start by learning your times tables so that you can work your way up to the really fun bits of math. But the problem is if those really fun parts of math are hidden past like many, many exams, not a lot of students are going to get there if all they're doing to get to that level is painting fences. Mm-hmm. So I think that the way that we teach math definitely could use a little bit of a makeover, a drag makeover. I think that we don't always necessarily need to train kids to become mathematicians. Maybe we just need to sort of give kids a little bit of a refresher and sort of just give them a little glimpse, a little peek at what great math can look like. Because really what mathematicians are doing, they're not sitting at their desks trying to multiply big numbers together in their heads when they have a calculator, which is what students think mathematicians are doing. Really, mathematicians are either on the forefront of trying to discover new things and come up with original work and ask questions that have never been answered. So I think that that's the exciting part of math that we need to show young people to get them interested in math.
So I'm actually really glad that you brought that up, specifically talking about educating young people, because one of the other things that I love about you and the way that you use social media and the way that you use your platform is you do use drag as an invitation in. It's something that's eye-catching. It's something that sets you apart, but it allows you to discuss subjects that are a little bit more complicated, a little bit what other people, myself included sometimes, might consider a little bit more dull. So it helps liven it up. It helps invite people in and have conversations they may not normally want to have or learn about subjects they may not normally want to learn about, which is a phenomenal aspect of drag. So many people think of drag as just a costume or a character that a cisgender man puts on to go shake their fake titties in a bar at midnight for dollar bills. And while that is certainly a beloved aspect of drag for many, what I love about what queens like you have been doing in the last several years is showing what else drag can be, showing the complexity of the art form. Why was it important for you to use your drag, use your artistic skills to teach these STEM skills?
I think growing up, I used to think that I had to choose one or the other. I used to have teachers say to me, Hein, like, you're really good at writing these essays and you make such creative presentations. Like, it's going to be a shame if you go into just studying math and you don't get to use your creativity. So I feel like students sort of have to choose if they're going to be a math person or an English person or a science mm-hmm. person. And I think that my goal has been to show people that you don't have to choose. And you can be artistic and like numbers at the same time. And you can sort of have your hand in many different baskets. I'm sort of a believer that gay people, we're just capable of doing anything we set our minds to. And if I want to be a mathematician and a drag queen and a pro basketball player, you know, I'll start studying and I'll start practicing and I'm going to do it. And I want all of my followers to know that they can do anything too.
So what I do love is that you do have such a focus on education and specifically on educating young people. However, that specific intersection of drag and young people or drag and educating young people has come under fire in, mm-hmm. you know, in our country. I'm not really sure how things are in Canada, but I know here, at least in the United States, that the intersection of drag and young people has become quite a hot point. Where do you think that you fit into that conversation? How do you hope that presentations like yours are creating bridges in those kinds of discussions?
Well, I want to start off by saying that some of that like bigotry and rhetoric is working its way up to Canada. A lot of Canadians, you know, sort of take pride in thinking that we're a bit better than the Americans sure. on some social yeah. issues. But, you know, lately, those rhetorics have been working their way up here, and I've been getting people protesting at my events. I've just always believed in leading with love and light and positivity and being a good role model for people. I've never, you know, claimed that little students should be like me or become a drag queen or be gay. I've always just had the message that they should stay in school and study math. You know, that's the only thing I'm really trying to peddle and promote. I think that for me to make a change, I just have to put my best foot forward and be that role model so that other parents and teachers can see the videos and think, oh, like drag queens aren't all just doing things in gay bars for adult men. Sometimes drag queens can be doing math lessons and drag queens can be on TV and drag queens can be in daytime television. And I think that by having drag in these other mediums on national TV, on podcasts, on YouTube videos, people are able to see drag as more than just a nightclub act. I do love working in the nightclubs, but we're also more than that.
Who doesn't?
Right?
Zero shade to a nightclub act. We love it. And that is one phenomenal, important aspect of drag, because that's where a lot of people do get introduced to drag. And again, no shade to it. Love it completely. Love it dearly. I just love and appreciate the art form so much that I'm so glad that the rest of what it is now becoming more accessible to people.
And really, I mean, I just love dressing up. I love wearing sparkly colors. I love dressing and looking glamorous. And my life, I just feel, is like a big game of dress up. And why shouldn't everybody's lives be like that? Why do we need to feel that, oh, because I'm a boy, I need to wear this color? Blue is for boys, pink is for girls. That's just so childish to me. We're all adults and we have one life to live. Why are we not just living our lives to the fullest and expressing ourselves the way that we want to express ourselves? I mean, even take drag out of the equation, whether it's a nightclub act, how you want to define it, even take all the gender out of the equation. Why are we not allowed to just dress the way we want to dress? I mean, it's a free country, for God's sakes, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you have... You know, have you had any interactions where you have had some of those, you know, maybe kids or young people, you know, come up to you or maybe get an email or something like that, where you were the person that made them interested in wanting to study math more or take more of a serious interest in math? Have you gotten any kind of that feedback?
Yes. And it's always the best kind of messages to get, you know, because I remember when I was a kid and the teacher would like roll in the big TV on the wheels and like play a video of Bill Nye. And now kids are saying, oh, my teacher is like playing your videos in my class. And I'm just thinking, wow, that's wild. That
that is so
I'm
great.
I'm the queen that's being rolled in to teach these kids about fractions. It's amazing. And, you know, to hear kids say that I'm the reason that they're wanting to pursue math, or I even just planted a seed in their mind to think that math was cool. You know, that's why I do what I do.
That's amazing. Are you the math friend in your friend group when you go out to dinner? Do you have to do all the tip math and all of that?
Oh yeah. I mean, I when I'm like bored, I just like try to do math in my head. Like if I'm like pumping gas, I like try to predict like how much it'll cost before it.
I don't have to predict. I know exactly how much it's going to cost. It's going to cost $20 because that's what I have in my wallet, and it's going to cost $20. I don't know how many gallons that's going to equate to, but it will cost $20. I can do that.
No, for me, it's just fun to work out the numbers in my head. And that's really why I started doing the videos, because I'm just like always like full of those little riddles and those little math questions. So I started doing the videos because I was like, well, like my friends are tired of hearing this. So maybe somebody else wants to hear this.
What's your favorite math riddle?
Oh, gosh. Well, the one that I started off the channel with, I don't really do many riddles these days. I think I have to start getting into it again. But the one that I started off the TikTok account with was, if a dress and a pair of shoes in total cost $100, and the dress is $99 more expensive than the shoes, then how much are the shoes?
Are the shoes a dollar?
Okay, if the shoes are a dollar and the dress is $99 more than that.
No.
We'll work it out together.
No, their combined total is $100.
The combined is $100. So if the dress is $99 more than the shoes. If the shoes are $1, then the dress is 99 plus 1, which is 100. But then 100 plus 1 is 101.
So the shoes are free?
No, because if the shoes are 0, then the dress is 99.
Listen, do you want to diagram a sentence? I can diagram a sentence. We can write a poem. What's the answer?
It's right in the middle. It's not a dollar. It's not free. It's 50 cents. If the shoes are 50 cents, the dress is $99.50, which is $99 more than 50. And then $99.50 plus 50 cents is $100.
Dang it. I feel dumb.
The point of the riddle is that the first answer you think of is not the right one. So, you know, you had the same thought process as everybody when they hear that, which is normal. It's totally normal. And the point of the riddle is sort of just to think a little bit slowly. Maybe you're writing down an equation, maybe you're writing it down and seeing, and maybe you're doing a little bit of trial and error.
I love that. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it. I'm gonna go trick everybody I know with that. And I'm gonna be so mad because I'm gonna be the only one that got it wrong. Everybody else is like a math person in my life.
You'll be surprised.
So. Okay. I told you before we started recording, but I have been so focused on your presentation of math and your skills with math that I completely didn't even get into my brain that you were on Drag Race. How was that?
It was a lot of fun. I'm like a Drag Race super fan, but since I'm in Canada, we used to never think that we'd ever get on Drag Race. I mean, Brooklyn Heights was the first Canadian to get on Drag Race, but that's because we all knew that she had a work visa and she was like living in the States at the time. But when they announced that Drag Race was doing a Canadian spinoff, then obviously I had to audition right away.
Sure.
I made it onto the first season and it was lots of fun. You know, it was an experience for sure that I'll always remember. Didn't exactly go the way I had planned. Because, you know, in my like delusional mind, I was like making it to the finale, but I lasted just 2 episodes. But I learned a lot and I had a lot of fun.
Would you go back for a Canadian All-Stars?
You know what? I think I would. I think the secret to going back and having a good time is just to set your expectations way down low. I think I would just go back and like totally be ready to like leave that same episode. Like I'll literally just bring one outfit and just be ready to go home episode one. That way, if anything happens that's better than that, I'll just be, you know, pleasantly surprised.
I do. I unfortunately understand that feeling. I go into a lot of situations going, okay, well, I'm here. I was invited, so I came. I'm absolutely not going to win. I am nobody. This is not going to me. This is going to go to somebody else. Yeah. So
years ago when I was on the show, you know, I was like so delusional and so confident that I like really thought I was going to go far. But that's how I've like evolved and changed since doing the show, because I used to just like, you know, think that my value and my worth as a drag queen was like all about, oh, whose outfit is a toot and whose is a boot? And then how are we all going to rank each other? But I've really matured a lot since then, because I've realized, you know, like, we're all just different sorts of entertainers and the show can only crown one winner, and we're all different and we're all winners in our own way.
You know,
and everybody say love.
That does actually bring up an interesting subject that I have been thinking about. I talked with one of your drag sisters, Jinx Monsoon, about this.
Oh my God, I love Jinx.
Oh yeah, yeah. She was at my house here a few weeks ago, and we got to talk about a bunch of stuff. And I'm going to interview her for the show in a couple of days. So, yeah, sweetheart. But I've been thinking about drag as an art form and how it is wonderful to see how many queens, how many people, I mean, how many kids, because of how big an institution Drag Race has become, mm-hmm. how many kids are now thinking, I would love to grow up to become a drag queen, that it is now a profession mm-hmm. that you could aspire to do full time to pay your bills, that it could sure. be a lucrative profession. All of those things were impossibilities 20 years ago, maybe even, you know, 10 years ago. But now it's something that folks that are, you know, under 30 are mm-hmm. thinking, I would like to do that. You know, you've got kids doing that. However, there's a flip side to that, is that it does seem to be a very vertically invested career path. Mm-hmm. Like, it does seem like you can become a full-time drag queen and you can have a lucrative career, but you do have to go on Drag Race. And that seems to be the only path forward. Am I wrong there? One.
All right.
Is that a good thing?
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I have a lot of thoughts about this. I think that there's, first of all, definitely lots of drag queens that are doing drag full time that are not on Drag Race. Mm-hmm. They are working and they're hustling and they're making a full time living without the help of the show. Being on the show definitely does help get your name out there and get you other kinds of opportunities. But with that being said, being on the show isn't necessarily a one way ticket to a full time career. There's lots of us that go on the show and then we go back to working a day job, to working at the same bars that we were always working at. So it's definitely hard. And, you know, there are, you know, a small handful of drag queens that, as you say, are really seeing a very vertical rise. There's drag queens out there that are millionaires. That's definitely not something that is really realistic or even likely to happen for the average person.
We don't all go off to become Trixie Mattel. Yeah.
No, we really can't. So I think that overall, Drag Race has been really a good thing for the economy of drag. It's meant that so many of us are able to do this full time. It's meant that so many of us are able to push the envelope of drag and bring it into other spheres like math, mm-hmm. because RuPaul has set up this format where people are able to see that drag queens are humans. Underneath mm-hmm. all of the makeup and wigs, we're not just these like scary creatures dominating underground bars. We're people with stories, with a sense of humor, with hopes and dreams and aspirations. And we're people that anybody would want to get to know and be friends with. And that's how I fell in love with drag, is through watching Drag Race and seeing myself in queens like Raja and Manila Luzon and mm-hmm. Jinx Monsoon. And mm-hmm. so I think that you know, I can't fault RuPaul's Drag Race for sort of changing the dynamic and the atmosphere of drag. I have nothing but just thanks and gratitude for the show. Do I think that every kid should sort of drop everything to become a drag queen? I don't know about that.
No, but So when you think of other artistic endeavors that have had reality competition components that have allowed people to go on to stardom, American Idol, you know, the idol, various idols around the world were kind of the juggernaut for a long time. But then other competition shows, X Factor, The Voice, you know, there was a Country Star, you know, there's a few different singing competitions that have come up over the years to create some competition and create other avenues. Drag is one where there does seem to be one mainstream success. If you had it your way, what other kinds of content, programming, film would you like to see created to show some of the more diverse aspects of drag as the art form?
What I've always really loved about drag is the craftsmanship and the artistry. I would love to see shows that sort of dive into the making of a drag costume or the goings on of like a wig stylist and sort of the more crafts, like DIY aspect of drag. Because that's how I fell in love with drag, is sort of being able to be a walking form of art in a head-to-toe creation of something you built yourself. So I'd love to see a little bit more of that aspect of it. I also think that I could imagine drag reality shows that aren't necessarily competition-based, where there isn't like a winner and a loser in the end. But I think that the success of Drag Race is just proof that that format has really stuck and it's really compelling to people. And I mean, they've won like a bajillion Emmys at this point. So it's like,
sure.
I think there's something in that formula that's just magical.
One of the conversations that's come up recently surrounding Drag Race and competition shows like it, but really Drag Race, is the amount of investment that it takes financially to ready yourself to go onto the show. What is that good? It costs a lot of money to become TV ready. And those of us that grew up going to drag clubs, those of us that grew up, you know, going and seeing a drag show at midnight on Sunday in rural East Texas, you know, you grew up seeing people getting off the rack BCBG dresses and shake and go wigs and all of that. And that was drag, and that was fine. That was perfectly fine. There is a level of, you know, they call it the Olympics of drag for a reason. There is a level of polish that has become expected for queens on TV that a lot of folks coming from very real, very, you know, we celebrate the rural drag queen getting up and getting on TV, but we don't seem to have that love for their wardrobe when it's walking down the runway. Can you speak a little bit to the economics of being a drag queen? That's the fun intersection of math and drag for you, is the economics, the finances that it takes to be a drag queen, that upfront cost.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually a topic that I talk about in a whole chapter in my book. I talk about sort of the game theory of Drag Race. In game theory, there's this problem called the prisoner's dilemma, which is basically you have two convicts, they rob a bank, the police don't really have much evidence on them. So they separate them, they put them into two separate rooms, and they say, if you rat on the other person, then we'll let you go free. But if they rat on you, then you're going to go to jail. If you both rat on each other, then you're both going off to jail. But if both of you stay silent, then you can both go free, because there's not enough evidence to convict them. And basically, what game theory says is that all the incentives, when you stack them up, you are incentivized to rat on the other person, because ratting on them will just ultimately increase your probabilities of going free. The problem is, if both of them rat on each other, then they both lose. Where that applies with Drag Race is you have these contestants that are all, you know, wanting to arm themselves with the best costumes, the best wigs, the best shoes, the most expensive runway package. If none of them do that, and all of them just bring sort of what they already had, then there's an even playing field, and RuPaul mm-hmm. just has to judge it based off of what are your other factors? What else do you bring to the table? How good mm-hmm. are you at sewing? How good are you at comedy? How good are you at dancing? If one person, you know, stacks mm-hmm. the pot by having an amazing runway package, then it sort of gives them advantage. So everybody's going to want to do that. And if everybody has these amazing runways, then once again, the playing field is level, but all of them are now like $100,000 in debt, fighting over one $100,000 check. So mm-hmm. it's sort of like a prisoner's dilemma with 12 different contestants that are all deciding whether how much money am I going to invest into this? Now, I do want to say, because you brought up other shows like American Idol and other reality shows, Drag Race is sort of unique in that we are like the only show where us contestants right. are expected to shell out like tens of thousands of dollars. But I also think that Drag Race is kind of unique in that it's a reality show where most of us contestants are sort of like more likely to have a career after the show and mm-hmm. be booked at clubs. I'm not sure whether the person who is like in eighth place in American Idol is like being booked in clubs across the country to sing.
I don't think that anybody could tell you the last five winners of yeah. any of the singing competition shows. Yeah. Drag Race does yeah. have a place in pop culture.
It has
culture
such
right
a loyal fan base
unbeat.
and the mm-hmm. audience does want to go out and yeah. support the queens and buy their merch and buy their book and go see their shows. So there is an element of recuperating your investment and making the money back. But, you know, these days that it's so saturated, it's no longer guaranteed. You know, I spent about $6,000 to go to Drag Race. I was a student.
That's on the lower end of the numbers.
I know, right? Like but to me, that was like a lot of money.
Yeah.
Luckily,
oh, yeah.
I was able to make that money back and then some. But like, I know queens who spent $30,000, $40,000. Even now, like in the US version, there's queens who spent like close to $100,000. And you're not necessarily guaranteed to make that back, right? You don't know if you're going to get booked afterwards. Maybe after you get off the show, maybe you're not the fan favorite. Maybe you just go back to working the same gigs as you were last time. And, you know, once the next season rolls around and people have forgotten about you, there you are just with all of your clothes that you bought and nowhere really to wear them or to no way to make that money back. So I think that it's definitely a gamble now. It's not so much of a guaranteed road to success. I think that queens getting on the show have to be smart about their package. And I think that they should try to invest in other elements of their drag, not necessarily buying a bunch of expensive clothes. Maybe you want to invest in sewing lessons and dance lessons and other ways mm-hmm. that you can be a more competitive player that's not necessarily going to cost you thousands and thousands of dollars. Now, with that being said, I do love, you know, the way that they have raised the bar on the show. As a viewer, sure. I love seeing these amazing outfits. But as a queen,
I feel for them. What drag makeup looked like in like the first three seasons of Drag mm-hmm. Race and what drag makeup looks like now is just a world of difference. It's just a world of difference.
Oh yeah. And I think definitely viewers need to cut queens a little bit of slack.
Yes.
If you're gonna go on Twitter saying, oh, why did she wear this outfit that was falling apart? But when that queen was getting ready to go on the show, she only had, you know, what was in her wallet as a local yeah. queen. So if you want your local queens to get on the show and be amazing, you better tip your local queens. Mm-hmm. You better book your local queens. And, you know, when they do get on Drag Race, maybe cut them a little bit of slack because it's harder than it looks.
Absolutely. Where do you hope your next step is? I mean, you've done Drag Race, which is some people, that's the pinnacle of their career. But you've done Drag Race. You're very successful on social media. You've got this great new book out from a university press, which personally, I think that's pretty swanky for a drag queen to be intersecting with a university press. That's awesome. I didn't realize that. But where do you hope that all of this takes you?
A lot of people ask me that. But to be honest, I really just like doing what I'm doing now. I don't really have many like aspirations to set the world on fire. I think that being able to do what I love and mm-hmm. to make a income off of it, I'm good enough with that. You know, I don't need to be driving a Ferrari. I don't need to be hosting Math and Drag versus the World anytime soon. I'm just happy sort of staying in my own lane. I have started a newsletter, which is my new venture, where I sort of do longer deep dives into like math lessons and also just like essays on pop culture. I'm planning to do an essay eventually on the economics of Drag Race. So it's just a new style of creating content that's not like a 60-second video explainer. It's a little bit more slow-paced and a little bit more thoughtful. So that's the newest thing that I'm doing. But really, I just love teaching. I love making content and sharing my passion for education with people.
What's the next big problem that you want to solve? What is exciting you about the field of math right now? Like, what's next? What problem is some little somebody out there? What's his, you know, Matt Damon? What is the mm-hmm. next Matt Damon out there? What math problem are we? I hear all the time about these, like, oh, you know, this Harvard professor solved this problem that nobody's been able to solve in 500 years. Is there anybody close to cracking one of those that you're just like watching that the rest of us should be watching? What's exciting in the world of math right now?
Oh gosh, well, the newest piece of news that just came out a few months ago was this thing called the hat tile. One of the professors that worked on actually was a professor at my university, the University of Waterloo. So I got the chance to interview him about this. And they basically found this new shape that could be like tessellated to fill an entire tile. Sort of like, you
I
know, if you look.
I saw that!
Yes, if you
I
look
think
behind
I probably
you,
saw it on your channel.
On the wall, but it's a shape that, you know, never repeats itself. The uh-huh. pattern would never repeat. So that was pretty exciting. In terms of what's exciting me personally now, I've really been interested lately in more the history side of math and math around the world and in different cultures. I think even from like doing the book and doing all this research, because I find math history so interesting, I feel like a lot of it is taught from a Eurocentric perspective, where all the mathematicians and all the people creating these new discoveries have like just been from Europe. And we're not necessarily talking about the math that came out of China and India and Mesoamerica and even mm-hmm. other parts of the world. So that's the thing that has been interesting me lately.
What's been something that, what was the discovery while you were researching for your book that excited you the most?
Well, one thing was Mayan numerals in Central America. The Maya had this whole separate number system to ours where they used a base 20 system. So instead of, mm-hmm. you know, we count to 10 and then sort of the digits start over from there. But the Maya used a base 20 system. So their math worked a little bit differently than ours. And their math was all sort of centered around timekeeping and their calendar. You hear about, you know, the Maya calendar sure. and 2012 and all of that jazz. And that's just
that
been so
interesting
to me. It
was a wild time to be alive. We were all right? just waiting for the world to end.
But I found it so interesting because we think of numbers as something that's so objective. And it's like, obviously, 1 + 1 = 2 and 9 + 3 = 12. But when you sort of convert all of that into a totally different number system, the things that you think were obvious aren't obvious anymore. And it sort of forces you to think, you know, what is obvious and what is the nature of truth and what are numbers if all of this stuff is subjective and all of this stuff can be taken down and replaced with new numbers? What in math is objective and what's really there and what, how much of it is just our own inventions that we've placed on it?
I you always hear, especially in sci-fi shows, that like math is this universal language, that if you just learn to kind of speak math, that you could, mm-hmm. I mean, gosh, you could talk to any alien that ever landed, or, you know, mm-hmm. we could all talk to each other if we all just spoke math. Is that true? Does that have a basis in reality? Is math really this universal language? Have we all always done math the same way? Or is math maybe not as universal as sci-fi wanted to teach us?
In the 18th and 19th centuries, mathematicians had a little bit of an identity crisis and an existential crisis where they started asking themselves exactly what you've asked. Is math something that's universal? Is it objective? Or is it something that we've just made up? You know, what is math? How do we know that these theorems are true? And what they sort of concluded in the end after like many months of debate and discussion is that math is only as true as the basic foundational rules that we've agreed on. So you can say that, you know, the Pythagorean theorem is true because of this, and that's true because of this. But it all has to start from some foundation that you basically mm-hmm. just have to agree is true or false. Mm-hmm. So there aren't these objective truths, but rather there's just these starting points that we've agreed on, the basics of our recipes of what we can prove with math. But, you know, the strange and crazy thing is, even if it is something that we've kind of just made up, it works really well. We can land on the moon. We can build pyramids. We can make Wi-Fi and have audio video conversation from like thousands of miles away. So, you know, if it is something that's just in our heads that we're just making up, we're really lucky that it works really well.
And not only can we land, we can come back.
Yeah.
That's the bigger part. I've seen Hidden Figures. The coming back mm-hmm. was the hard part. We can get somewhere. It's the coming back. Well, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for giving us a peek behind the curtain of so many of your worlds. If people are, you know, really curious after this episode and they want to, it's been a while since they've sat down with or the closest they've gotten to math is Sudoku or something. Mm-hmm. If somebody's curious, where's the best place for them to start with math?
I would recommend visiting my page, watching a couple of videos. There's no quiz. There's no having to get the right answers or you're failing the exam. It's just, I just do math for the fun of doing it and just for the joy of learning something new.
And where can people find you on all your social media?
You can find me at Online Kyne. That's K-Y-N-E, which is my real name. Actually, people think that it's a drag name, but that's the name that my parents gave me. And you can find my book, Math and Drag, anywhere where books are sold. And my new newsletter, if you'd like to read my writing, is called The Math Queen Digest. So you can find all of that at onlinekyne.com.
Well, Kyne Santos, thank you so much for being here. Congratulations on all of the success, and that I hope it keeps adding up. Is that, that's a good enough.
That's good. I like that.
Well, that's going to do it here for this episode of Head on Fire. My thanks to my guest, Kyne Santos, whose new book, Math and Drag, comes out Tuesday, March 5th. Now, if you like this show and you want to support it, there are a number of ways to help. Consider sharing it with your friends on social media. That organic word of mouth is the best possible way to grow this audience. You could also like or rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you happen to be listening to this. And while you're there, consider leaving a review. Reviews help recommend the show to other listeners just like you. If you hate the ads that support the episode, then pay me. Consider joining my Patreon on a monthly basis. Patrons receive additional audio and video content, as well as archived episodes, a private Discord, and a little opportunity to help me with stuff along the way. I ask these folks to help me decide questions for upcoming guests. There's a little preview of stuff to come, and you know, sometimes they get free goodies from me, unreleased or unpublished chapters from previous or upcoming books. I dropped a whole new poetry book on them last summer. So my Patreon supporters have plenty of stuff. And what's great is that, you know, you can get it for as little as $1 a month. So if you just want to connect with me on social media, I am at Head on Fire Pod everywhere. Oh, I forgot to say the Patreon link. Patreon.com/Head on Fire Pod. I promise I know how to do this. My month off didn't destroy my brain. Anyways, I'm gonna go. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for downloading and sharing the show. I'm gonna go, but before I do, please remember, never stop seeking illumination like a man with his head on fire seeks water. Be well.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.